ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife history.
Well, around this time of year, mid-November, we look back and remember Ned Kelly's execution in Old Melbourne Jail on November the 18th, 1880. Of course, there have been countless words written and pictures painted and movies made and, of course, songs sung about our most famous bushranger.
No, they took Ned Kelly and they hung him in the Melbourne jail. He fought so very bravely, dressed in iron mail. And no man single-handed can hope to break the bars. It's a thousand like Ned Kelly who'll hoist the flag of stars. We sing, "Poor Ned, you're better off dead. At least you'll get some peace of mind. You're out on the track, they're right on your back. Boy, they're gonna hang you high."
Yes, the legend of Ned Kelly, which for some, of course, is a source of endless puzzlement as to why a criminal like him should be lionized, and for others, of course, he enters almost sainthood. I guess the debate goes on about we debate who we are. But in 1875, 5 years before Ned Kelly was hanged, Victoria had been amazed by the life and death trial of its up to then most famous prisoner. His name was John Wechurch, known as the Werewolf of Pentridge. And on this 150th anniversary of his trial, we're joined once again by Michael Adams, creator and host of the Forgotten Australia podcast. Michael joins us regularly to look at these windows back to the past, what was happening in particular weeks across the years. Michael, good evening to you. Welcome back.
Thank you so much.
You dubbed this fellow the Colonial Chopper, as in Mark Chopper. Who was John Wechurch?
John Wechurch was, as you said in the intro there, the most notorious criminal prisoner in Victoria, possibly in Australia, before Ned Kelly burst onto the scene. So his name was known far and wide. He was kind of a boogeyman. And I call him the Colonial Chopper, because Chopper Reed was, you know, obviously the king of Pentridge, big, tough bloke, you know, standover man, you know, ran gangs and all the rest of it. And then later on became, you know, sort of an author and a kind of almost cuddly Uncle Chop Chop figure. Exactly 100 years before that, however, Pentridge was, you know, in fear of John Wechurch, except John Wechurch was 5'2", would have weighed maybe 140 pounds soaking wet. He was a complete loner.
Tiny little fella.
Yeah. Tiny little fella. And he wasn't in it for sort of, you know, the clout or the cash. He was a rebel who would not break or bend. What he wanted were his rights, and he would do anything for them. And that would mean taking on not just the man, but the entire of colonial Victoria. He was quite extraordinary. So John Wechurch's, his real name was John Taylor. He was born in 1829 in England. By his sort of mid-late teens, he was getting into trouble with petty theft and so forth. He robbed a bakery. He stole the till, 5 shillings worth, and got himself 7 years transportation to Tasmania. So, I mean, you know, he wasn't exactly a criminal mastermind. He'd spent like 3.5 years in prison in England before he was actually transported. When he got to Hobart, he wasn't a well-behaved prisoner. His ticket of leave was pretty quickly cancelled. Then he was, you know, insolent and acted out. So he was sent to Port Arthur, which was, you know, the secondary jail for repeat offenders, where he would be treated very harshly. He, again, didn't learn his lesson. I imagine he was a bit of a smart mouth. He didn't, you know, follow orders. And every time he acted out, he'd be punished. He'd receive a new punishment. So it's, you know, solitary, bread and water, irons, hard labour, you know. So you swear at an overseer, okay, you've got 14 days of hard labour or 14 days of solitary. Now, the thing was, that 14 days of solitary or 14 days of hard labour in irons started right there and then. The actual time was not added to your sentence. So he'd been sentenced to 7 years, and in January of 1854, despite all these other infractions, he was free. He crossed Bass's Strait, went to Victoria, tried his hand on the goldfields. That didn't work for him. He ended up in the early 1860s, convicted of, again, fairly minor, silly crimes. He raided a hotel in North Melbourne and made off with 4 shillings. So he was actually going backwards in terms of his haul from these things. And this time he got 3 years. And again, he acted out. You can look at his prison record and see that he was given, you know, an extra 3 months here, an extra 2 months there, extra 2 weeks, solitary, hard labour, chains and so forth. Again, he was released after his 3 years. What it did was that all that extra time ate up his remissions, but it didn't add to his sentence. Okay, so in 1866, in April, he and his mate went on a burglary spree up in Ballarat, got caught. This time they'd done, you know, crimes with the value of about 50 quid, and he got 6 years. So this time around, because of his previous convictions, he'd be eligible for fewer remissions. The best he could hope for he'd be released after 8 months early. So in, you know, 1871. Otherwise, if he did his full stretch, he'd be in until April of 1872. So he's in Pentridge, and he is a troublesome prisoner. Now, by troublesome, I mean, you know, if they said turn and face the wall and you didn't do it fast enough, that was an offence. That was 7 days in solitary. And that's, you know, 7 days in a dark hole on bread and water. You know, if you spoke out in an obscene manner to an overseer, that could be 2 weeks or a month of hard labour in chains and so on. Up to, you know, assault, where it was 3 months. These were sometimes dealt with just by the jail governor, but on more serious charges, they were dealt with by a visiting magistrate in a star chamber. So John Wechurch would be hauled in. The magistrate would hear from the warders, you know, as if you're going to be able to question their evidence against you, and then he would summarily give you 3 months or 6 months in hard labour, et cetera, et cetera. So John Wechurch's actual time, 6 years, he ended up having, by the early 1870s, 1871, an extra 6 years worth of these concurrent sentences. And then he was told the news. You're actually going to serve all of that time on top of what you've already been sentenced to, which was completely against the law. He acted out. He was like, okay, well, what I need to do is I need to commit a crime that's sufficiently serious that they have to charge me in open court in Melbourne rather than deal with me in these star chambers in Pentridge. Mm-hmm. So he set fire to the Inspector General of Prison's empty premises. They hadn't been used for a while. They knew he'd done it, but they wouldn't charge him with that because they didn't want to get him into open court.
They decided to do something more serious.
Yep. So he... Again, now it was made clear to him, you're going to be serving all of this time. Hmm. He actually wrote to the Premier. He wrote to the Inspector General of Prisons. He wrote to the Attorney General saying, you're about to be holding me completely against the law. Anything that happens after this is going to be on you. He set fire to the shoemaker's shop. And again, they didn't... arson was a capital crime. You could be hanged for it. People weren't, but you if you were found guilty, you'd get the death sentence and then it would be commuted. So this was a crime that was way above the ability of a visiting magistrate to deal with, but they actually gave him like 9 months for for burning down the shoe shop, just, you know, inside the prison. So then his sentence actually finished in April of 1972, and they said, well, we've got you for another 6 years and 1 month and counting. Mm. And he was a fairly resourceful fellow. He'd managed to get himself a blade and sharpen it, and he stuck it in his Bible, and he asked to have an audience with the Inspector General, George Duncan. And 15 years earlier, the Inspector General of Prisons, John Price, had been killed by prisoners. So, you know, it was a pretty dicey job to have. Anyway, Inspector Duncan came in. Now, this guy had been suppressing John Wechurch's letters. He'd been rebuffing his overtures to the Attorney General for the law to be followed in terms of, you know, him being released. Wechurch made all of these arguments to Duncan face-to-face. Duncan said, sorry, can't help you. And Wechurch whipped out his blade and stabbed this guy in the groin. Wow. In the cell.
Wow.
Now, the wound was about an inch deep. George Duncan was back at his desk the next morning, but Wechurch quite loudly said, "I tried to kill him, I tried to kill him." What he wanted was a charge of attempted murder, which could not be dealt with by a visiting magistrate in a Star Chamber, and he got his wish. He was put on trial in Melbourne, and now he could make all of his arguments, and he did. And the press listened and went, you know, he seems like we haven't got sympathy for him because he's a sort of, you know, eccentric, troublesome prisoner, and has now shown that he's also violent. But he might have a point here. Like, you know, the law has not been followed. He was actually unlawfully incarcerated when he committed this crime. He wouldn't have been able to commit this crime if he'd been released. In any case, he was found guilty of attempted murder, mm-hmm. which was a capital offence. The jury recommended mercy, and the judge then sentenced him, the sentence was commuted to life in prison. Wechurch actually said, "I do not thank the jury. I want to go to the gallows." He was sent back to Pentridge. Now the Inspector General had permission to treat him outside the regulations. So he was, even though he'd been sentenced to a period of hard labour as part of this life sentence, he was not doing any hard labour on the roads. He was kept inside a cage, inside a cell in A Division. Those cells are about 9 by 5 feet, so the cage was smaller than that. I mean, he was a small guy, but it probably meant that if he stretched out, he'd be able to touch end to end.
Why was he called the werewolf of Pentridge?
Because, well, his bloodlust was such that after 22 months in this effectively solitary confinement and isolation, he begged Inspector General George Duncan, "Please let me do some work." The Inspector General let him do some sort of, you know, gardening sort of work, and Wechurch took it upon himself to use a hoe. He actually asked to see George Duncan again. George Duncan wasn't available, so he used a hoe and smacked a warder in the side of the head with it, knocked him out, opened up a wound on this guy's head, so he was again charged with attempted murder. Now the press was like, this guy has got total bloodlust. He wants to kill and be killed. He wants to sort of, you know, commit a crime that gets him hanged. He was put on trial again. So he got to this time, and in the interim, the law had been changed so that these cumulative sentences could actually now be added on to people's sentences. And this was brought up in court. His defender said, "Well, you know, last time he was here, he actually argued he'd been unlawfully detained. You guys changed the law." So he was right in the first place. Mm. The judge said to the jury, "He's not here. The Crown had stitched themselves up by claiming this was an attempted murder." Wechurch said he'd only wanted to hit the guy so he could get back into the courts and argue that he was now being held in this cage and so on. The jury was told they had two choices, acquittal or attempted murder, and they actually acquitted him. So he was sent back to Pentridge again. And a year later, he did it again. This time he'd actually been kept in this cage still with irons on, and they'd also decided to put his hands in leather gloves that were then padlocked to his wrists. Incredibly, like, and he would have been beaten and harassed, and the newspapers were saying this was a petty criminal who has been made completely mad by this treatment. Anyway, he managed to get himself an iron handle and he clobbered a guard who was adjusting his irons. And he was sent back for his third attempted murder trial. And this time he was found guilty and he was sentenced to death.
Was he hanged?
He was hanged in December of 1875.
He might have seen it as blessed relief.
He pretty much said as much, yeah. And he, a strange, strange thing, the governor of the Melbourne jail, Governor Castillo, J.B. Castillo, his little son lived in the jail with him, and this little son used to visit the condemned men. And he slipped through the bars the night before Wechurch was hanged and spent time with him. And he said that before he left, Wechurch took his hand in his hand and then patted him on the head, and Wechurch's tears just saturated this little boy's head. And he wrote about this in the Bulletin like 30 years later. He remembered Wechurch very, very sympathetically. 5 years later, he'd have a similar experience with Ned Kelly and just wrote him off as being not much account. So the Wechurch story, it's amazing. He went to the gallows, from all accounts, very sort of gracefully, without any fear. They said he stepped onto the gallows as though he was stepping into the dock in court, where he defended himself very eruditely, like a gentleman. And all of his letters are actually in the Public Records Office of Victoria file. Wow. So you can read his own sort of arguments, which are, you know, pretty compelling.
There you go.
Yeah.
John, the life and times of John Weechurch and the miserable life that he had. Michael, terrific to talk with you.
Thanks so much, Phil.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife. Yeah.